Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. This podcast is one that we're bringing up kind of quickly because we just happen to have a new paper that is directly in relation to the topic that we're having today. And the topic today that we're going to be talking about is contrast-induced nephropathy and post-contrast acute kidney injury. Basically, are they real things and what's the evidence behind them? As a fair warning, this is going to be a deep dive. If you've noticed on your podcast, it looks like this is going to be a longer one than usual. And there's a big reason why. We can't really break this up, and it's an important enough subject. We want to talk about it all together. So apologies in advance about the length of this one, but don't forget you do have a pause button. You can always go back. Now, the person I have with me today is Paul Shunk. He's an emergency physician in the U.S. military, and I'll let him introduce himself.
Well, Chip, thank you for having me. My name is Paul Shunk. I'm an emergency medicine physician in Central Texas. I've been in the Army for about 18 years now and a physician for the last six. So thank you for having me on. I just need to do a quick disclaimer that the views and opinions expressed do not represent the Department of Defense, the Army, or Carl R. Darnell Army Medical Center.
Perfect. And if you don't mind, I want to brag on you for just a second, because you're also going to be hopefully back on the show here in the near future about pediatric pain in the emergency department. And I think that ties in with what you're hoping to do here soon.
Yeah, that's right. I just got accepted recently to a pediatric emergency medicine fellowship in Dell Children's Hospital in Austin, Texas. And I'll be starting that July 1st. So stepping out of the attending shoes and back into a fellow shoes. So it's going to be kind of interesting and a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. That's great. Like I said, we hope to have you back on here soon to talk about that. So let's go back on topic for what we are here for today. We have quite a few papers, about 7-8 papers we're going to mention at least today. And Paul's actually got a few more he wants to talk about to start us off with. Contrast-induced nephropathy or post-contrast acute kidney injury. There's been a lot of debate about it in the last couple of years. And is it really something that we're actually seeing, or is it maybe at baseline to the population? Paul, you have some background research tying into the papers that we're going to talk about today. Do you mind getting us started off with that?
Yeah, no problem. And this is something that's happened to us all. We're sitting on shift taking care of a patient and realize they're getting sick and we need to order a CT with contrast and put the order in, and you start looking around, getting things moving, taking care of some other patients, and all of a sudden you feel like you're being watched, and you look up and you realize that the CT tech is standing over you with a paper in hand and saying, "Doctor, did you really mean to order this CT with contrast? The patient's creatinine is 1.4. If you don't sign this form, I can't do it." Kind of re-look at the labs and go ahead and make the decision, and most of the time we just go and do it. But is it actually a risk? How dangerous is it? The history of the contrast-induced nephropathy is long and a little bit convoluted, but the short version is much of what's in the textbooks now comes from old studies that predate the widespread current use of low and isoosmol contrast medium. The older contrast media had a significant increase in risk of contrast-induced nephropathy, and there's been extrapolated data from the arterial angiography studies as well. Most of the historical papers also didn't use any type of control group, and their studies didn't have any matching. So the incidence of acute kidney injury compared to CIN is often not reported. The problem with the utilization from the angiographical data is that the toxicity is concentrated and is significantly increased. Imagine you're doing a cardiac catheterization and the dye is injected intra-arterial and it flows directly down to the kidneys. This is a significantly different entity than the peripheral injected venous contrast that we use today, and it's significantly diluted by the time it reaches the kidneys. So really, a lot of the old data that we have just isn't very good, and it doesn't represent our current practice pattern. Unfortunately, that's what most of the recommendations are actually been built on, are these old data and old papers.
And you actually bring up a great point, and this is something I want to tie in real quick. We actually need to define the difference of acute kidney injury and then contrast-induced nephropathy. Now, I'm going to borrow the definitions because we're going to use this for the most part based on the American College of Radiology, or ACR's, manual on contrast media. That was last updated, according to this show, on the 19th of November, 2014. So post-contrast acute kidney injury, or PCAKI, is a general term used to describe a sudden deterioration in renal function that occurs within 48 hours following the intravascular administration of iodinated contrast medium. PCAKI may occur regardless of whether the contrast medium was the cause of the deterioration. PCIAKI is a correlative diagnosis. Okay, so here comes the real tricky part, and this is part of what we're going to talk about so much today. Contrast-induced nephropathy, or CIN, is a specific term used to describe a sudden deterioration in renal function that is caused by the intravascular administration of iodinated contrast medium. Therefore, CIN is a subgroup of PCAKI. CIN is a causative diagnosis, and that is really hard to actually prove, a causative diagnosis, especially when you're talking about these studies that we're going to mention where AKI seems to be similar in both groups or near similar.
Yeah, and it's something that you really have to pay attention to, especially in the old literature, is also the definitions for what they used AKI versus CIN are a little bit interchangeable, and the definitions from what they were using seemed to change from paper to paper. So even though you were talking about contrast-induced nephropathy in one paper, the definition and the rates that they used may be completely different in other literature.
That is a great point. That is one that I feel like even with the newer papers going through, it's kind of hard to narrow that down. That's why I like the ACR's definition so well. Should we go over the ACR first, do you think? Should we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the ACR is the American College of Radiology manual that talks about drugs and contrast media. It is their most recent and most up-to-date. It is a consensus and also literature-based. So in the past, the estimation of radiocontrast-associated nephropathy has been significantly higher in previous editions. In the current edition, they've actually decreased their recommendation to say that the current risk for acute kidney injuries in patients with a GFR of greater than 30 is very small, and that it seems to be a reasonable risk if you use it in a patient who's above 30. So this is different than a lot of the previous estimates, and they use estimated GFR, whereas most of the other studies do serum creatinine. There have also been a couple of studies that have shown that estimating the risk may be a better estimation using GFR over creatinine. Unfortunately, most of the current literature still uses the creatinine-based definition.
Yes, and actually this is a great point to bring up, because I think it's the Davenport papers they talk about where they're using eGFR versus creatinine and how it seems to be a better measure overall. I'd like to point out a couple of things from the ACR manual that seems to make a huge difference. This is the only thing that's bolded in the ACR manual on contrast media that I could find regarding this topic. And it says, at the current time, it is the position of ACR Committee on Drugs and Contrast Media that CIN is a real, albeit rare, entity. And so it also talks about how CIN seems to be rare in children, and that the gadolinium-based contrast used in MRI also seems to be exceptionally rare, because there's really no definite evidence of CIN with that. That's why we're sticking with the CT contrast, and that seems to be the bigger issue. One thing to keep in mind with serum creatinine is that it's considerably influenced by multiple factors. The patient's muscle mass, nutritional status, and age all seem to be playing factors in that. And so this is one thing to keep in mind, is that creatinine does vary quite a bit. GFR seems to be less so. Especially when you keep in mind, I think we're still using the, African-American versus non-African-American GFRs for the most part, but I think the eGFR helps kind of keep that in mind as well. So if we're paying attention to those numbers, we can still keep a better idea and notice that eGFR seems to be more accurate and reliable in predicting the true GFR, because that's what we really care about, than creatinine. So when we're using these measures, they're meant to be surrogate markers for what the true GFR is, and GFR is glomerular filtration rate.
And I think this is an important thing to pick up and also to keep in the back of your mind, is that the ACR did put out that contrast seems to be safe above a GFR of 30. And this is even without the newer evidence that we're going to be talking about, something that you can bring back to your institution to show to your radiologists to maybe decrease the amount of pushback you're getting when you're ordering studies.
They mention it two different spots, and they slightly different things. It's on the CIN studies under that part of the ACR manual. It says, in patients with a stable eGFR greater than or equal to 45, IV iodinated contrast media are not an independent nephrotoxic risk factor. And in patients with a stable baseline eGFR between 30 and 44, iodinated contrast media are either not nephrotoxic or rarely so. And then it mentions under risk thresholds, and this often is the one that gets quoted, is that at the current time, there is very little evidence that IV iodinated contrast material is an independent risk factor for AKI in patients with an eGFR greater than or equal to 30. Therefore, if a threshold for CIN risk is used at all, 30 seems to be the one with the greatest level of evidence. Any threshold put into practice must be weighed on an individual patient level with the benefits of administering contrast material. And so it continues on, contrast-enhanced CT has superior diagnostic performance compared to unenhanced CT for a wide array of indications. Failure to diagnose an important clinical entity carries its own risk. And I think that's something we have to keep in mind. We have to keep in mind the fact that contrast is something we need to use in certain conditions, and that using no contrast, just because someone's GFR is maybe a little lower or the creatinine is a little bit lower than what some people would like, can actually put that patient at greater risk. And so sometimes, most classically, we think about trauma patients. If that person is truly sick, almost always we're going to want to do that CT with IV contrast if they need a CT. The comparison risk benefits and then how to treat it seems to be also something we can control.
Yeah, it's very true. A lot of times they throw around like, oh, you're going to cause AKI, you're going to cause AKI. But when you're dealing with such great uncertainty as we do in emergency medicine, you're trying to rule out life-threatening conditions that sometimes you can't even wait for a GFR to come back because, you know what, this person may have an aortic dissection. And if we don't get them to the scanner now, they could exsanguinate and die in front of me. And that risk of death is significantly higher than the potential bump in kidney function that may or may not be present. And this is something that we do every day. We weigh the risks and benefits. However, I think over the years, we've been using a flawed metric because we've all been taught how dangerous contrast material is and how dangerous it's going to be. But really, I think it's really been overestimated.
I remember asking an attending once before their thoughts about this, and I'll paraphrase it slightly to keep the language a little less. But he basically says, screw the kidneys. You know, screw the kidneys. The kidneys we can fix. We can flush them. We can do whatever else. If we have to, we have to use dialysis. That's fine. But a dead person's still a dead person. If it means the difference of life and death, screw the kidneys. We can always fix those later.
I don't disagree with that statement.
And that doesn't mean that we're talking about doing this for every single person, but we need to keep in mind that there's real risk benefit to keep in mind, and that if it means the difference of a definitive diagnosis, contrast may actually be pretty safe. So one other thing I want to tie in with that real quick before we move on. Under volume expansion of the ACR, it talks about the major preventative action to mitigate the risk of CIN is to provide intravenous volume expansion prior to contrast medium administration. The ideal infusion rate and volume is unknown, but isotonic fluids are preferred, i.e. lactated Ringer's or normal saline, with one possible protocol being 100 milliliters an hour, beginning 6 to 12 hours before and continuing 4 to 12 hours after. That's most practical in an inpatient setting, but if you think about it more simply, if you bolus the patient before and after to help kind of flush the kidneys as a way to speak, that does seem to make a big difference.
Absolutely. And most of our trauma patients and most of our patients are getting fluid boluses in the emergency department. I think it's important that we then can convey to the inpatient team, hey, this person got contrast. Let's go ahead and make sure that we keep them hydrated to prevent the potential complications.
100% agree. So I think we had a good point on the ACR manual. Maybe we should go into some of the background research here. And one of the first ones I think we should talk about is the Jennifer McDonald et al. April 2013 paper called Frequency of Acute Kidney Injury Following Intravenous Contrast Medium Administration, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. And so the reason why I'm bringing this one up is because it actually is starting the trend where we're noticing some big differences in papers. And I'll jump briefly to the conclusion, is that controlled contrast medium-induced nephropathy studies demonstrate a similar incidence of AKI, dialysis, and death between the contrast medium group and control group. So what do you think about this paper?
Well, what I liked about this paper is this is one of the first ones that actually did a contrast versus a control group to really look at the incidence in the hospitalized patient of what their kidney function is doing while there is an inpatient. We all know that there are massive fluid shifts during resuscitation where you're giving people tons of fluid and then you're using Lasix to take it off, and these fluid shifts can have a pretty substantial impact on the kidney function. What was really nice about this was it calculated the risk of contrast against the risk of an uncontrasted patient in the hospital. And I really think it started to bring to light that maybe what we've been looking at is just what happens to the kidneys when people are admitted in the hospital and not necessarily a direct result of the contrast that we gave them.
Another thing I wanted to point out is that of the papers they looked at, there were 13 papers 9 of which were retrospective and 4 prospective observational studies. And the reason why I want to mention that is because a lot of these papers end up being retrospective. But of those 13 studies, only 2 independently showed an overall higher incidence of AKI in the contrast medium group compared to the control group. Now, those 2 papers were Polina et al. And then Heller et al. There's something that's really screwy with these 2 papers I think we need to mention. Polina, the relative risk was 14. And that is really, really high, considering that the next closest paper, the only positive other paper, was Heller et al., and that one was done in 1991, which had a relative risk of 1.85. So what did you notice on this? Because this threw me off too.
Yeah, that kind of just jumps out at you. I mean, the first thing is that even with that relative risk of 14 with the Polina et al., it still didn't really affect the overall trend, and they still were able to come to a conclusion that contrast really wasn't harming very much. And then both of those, as you dig a little bit deeper into the studies, both of those didn't have a baseline creatinine, which really seemed odd. How can you figure out what the risk was when their baseline creatinine was admitted? So I kind of think those 2 papers, something a little fishy is going on.
And it's worth noting, out of the 13 papers, those were the only 2 on the meta-analysis that appear not to have a baseline serum creatinine, which really, as you just said, that's kind of a little odd there. So that was one of the big things I wanted to point out with this paper, is that this paper, it seems to start showing that there probably is some safety with AKI there, and that maybe we're overestimating our risk of AKI. And then actually doing the meta-analysis side of it looked pretty interesting too. So I think those are all the main points that we had for the April 2013 McDonald paper. Then there's the April 2014 Jennifer McDonald et al. Paper called The Risk of Intravenous Contrast Material Mediated Acute Kidney Injury, a Propensity Score Matched Study Stratified by Baseline Estimated Glomerular Filtration Rate. That is a heck of a title.
Yeah, and what I liked about this one is they looked just not at, you know, did the CTs cause a AKI, but what was the risk for patients at different GFRs? And I think their conclusion was pretty exciting, that diminished GFR isn't associated with an increased risk of serum creatinine-defined AKI. However, the risk of AKI is an independent of contrast material exposure, even in patients with a GFR of less than 30. The risk of an acute kidney injury when they have a low GFR is, of course, going to be higher. Their kidneys have already taken a hit, but it appears that the administration of contrast is most dangerous in those with the lowest GFRs.
Yeah, and this was actually a really interesting paper, because I want to take this quote from the results part. Incidence of AKI significantly increased with decreasing baseline eGFR, a p less than 0.0001. However, this incidence was not significantly different between contrast material and non-contrast material groups in any eGFR subgroup. So just like you said, kidney's already taking a hit. So yeah, contrast could cause AKI. It may not cause AKI though, because the people who even got no contrast seem to be in the same situation. And that I think says a lot right there. Now, given we're not saying that it couldn't be possible, it's just maybe it's not as bad as we once thought it was.
And this even brings a little bit into question the, you know, level that the ACR recommends of 30 for the estimated GFR. Of maybe that level is a little bit arbitrary. This paper would lead you to believe that, you know, even lower than that is okay.
Right. And that's what makes this a little interesting here, because, okay, this was the McDonald paper. We've talked about the 2 big McDonald papers, but it's worth mentioning that there may be a little more to this. I know some people out there in the FOMED and radiology world are going to say that these papers, they have certain limitations to them. There's quite a few of them that some people will point out, even the authors themselves would point out as well. But I think we need to keep in mind with these papers that there were actually 2 other papers that came out around the same time by Davenport et al. That brings about a whole different view. And some people say a whole different view. I think it actually ties into the same. By the way, a quick mention, all these come from the Journal of Radiology, RSNA. So you can find them all with here, these 4 papers, the 2 McDonald and 2 Davenport papers that we're talking about. So you want to talk about the first Davenport paper? This is from October 2013. This is contrast medium-induced nephrotoxicity risk assessment in adult inpatients, a comparison of serum creatinine level and estimated glomerular filtration rate based screening methods. And so this ties in the same kind of way. Can you talk a little bit about that?
This was a pretty nice study as well, because they were trying to figure out what screening method is going to be best for prediction of contrast-induced nephropathy. And their conclusion was that screening using an eGFR of less than 45 instead of the common serum creatinine threshold would significantly increase the number of inpatients identified at risk for CIN, but would reduce the misidentification of a large number of inpatients with low risk according to eGFR. So the serum creatinine will bump and go up and down during a hospital stay, but the eGFR is a little bit more precise as to what their kidneys are actually doing. So by changing your screening method from looking at just their serum creatinine to changing and looking at an eGFR, it might give you a little bit better picture of who is actually at risk.
And that goes back to the ACR paper, what it mentions too about how it seems that creatinine may not be as good a measure. It's one that's commonly used. I know it's one that's used in my department, but it's one that's commonly used because creatinine is one thing that's easier, and for some reason it seems to be more historic. But as we mentioned, there are a lot of things that can influence creatinine. One of the first groups that brought this up, according to this paper, is the European Society of Urogenital Radiology, or ESUR, adopted the eGFR-based screening strategy, and they did that based on a large propensity match retrospective multivariate analysis on adult patients with stable renal function. And it showed that IV iodinated contrast medium in a borderline nephrotoxic risk factor in patients with an eGFR of 30 to 44 and a substantial nephrotoxic risk factor in patients with an eGFR of less than 30. So this paper was kind of to help support and build off of that, is what I noticed there. What else did you notice with this paper?
One of the things I noticed was they definitely took a closer look at the diabetes component when looking at the serum creatinine and estimated GFR. And as we know, those who have diabetes, especially on diabetic medications, can be on an increased risk of nephrotoxic. What I didn't see in here is what medications the diabetic patients were on, which if you're on metformin, you're going to have an increased risk of acute kidney injury following contrast material. And I wondered if that was going to be a little bit of a confounding result. And I couldn't quite pull that out from this particular review.
One of the things I also noticed, and this is something worth, if you're interested in this and interested in bringing this up to your department, and we'll include all these in the show notes too, is that the paper actually compares and kind of converts between the serum creatinine level and the equivalent eGFR. And so saying, well, if your department is currently using this serum creatinine level as their stop point on when you need a CT or not, or with contrast, what that equivalent eGFR seems to roughly be, because it is actually slightly different in the ranges. And so I think this is one that we're not going to talk about as much, because I think we both agree after reading these papers, eGFR seems to be a better measure than serum creatinine.
Absolutely.
With that said, I think we've covered all the main points of this paper, the October 2013 paper by Davenport et al.
I think so.
All right, well then it's time to move on to the September 2013. Yes, we're going backwards for a second, because this actually helps bring in another point. This is Davenport et al., contrast material induced nephrotoxicity in intravenous low osmolality iodinated contrast material, risk stratification by using estimated glomerular filtration rate. And I want to bring this one up as the last of these four McDonald Davenport papers because of some of the things it talks about. And one of them is that the IV low osmolality iodinated contrast material is a nephrotoxic risk factor in patients with a stable eGFR less than 30, with a trend towards significance at 30 to 44, but does not appear to be nephrotoxic in patients with a pre-CT eGFR of 45 or greater, which is a little more of a conservative number than actually what the McDonald paper is showing. This is where some people think that there may be some bias or there may be some concern about the McDonald papers. And so I think it's worth bringing up the Davenport paper in this point.
Yeah, I thought this was very interesting, and I liked that they were able to come up with a cutoff of 45, but it was very interesting that with their paper, speaking of the Davenport paper, they seem to have a little bit more of a contrast is bad viewpoint than the other papers. And I wonder if there's any bias going on in there. This is also a propensity score match cohort analysis. And at least from what I could see, is, were you picking this as retrospective? Because it didn't really talk about if this was a prospective trial or not.
And of course, if any author or anyone is listening who's smarter than us, because there's always people smarter than us out there, right? If you can pick this out, I think it's worth knowing, but it looks like it's retrospective from everything I can tell.
You know, anytime you're doing a retrospective analysis, you always run the risk of increased selection bias, and it's just not as accurate as doing some of the kind of looking forward prospective studies.
As best as I can see, under the subject section, it says our patient's population was drawn from a comprehensive database of all CT examinations performed, regardless of indication, with or without IV contrast material on adult inpatients between January 1st, 2000 to May 14th, 2010, which, and it talks about in a single large academic health system. So that makes me really think that this is retrospective. They don't directly call it that, but it really acts like it's retrospective.
Retrospective data, you have a little bit less validity, and this is also a single center study, which also decreases your external validity and whether or not this can be applied to your patient population.
Exactly. And that's why I want to make sure when we're talking about that McDonald paper, they did include some prospective studies. And so those prospective studies, we need to keep at least in mind there. And that was really the main thing I saw, was just their conclusions and then how they got their data. Not to say that that's not a good study, but it's something to keep in mind when you're comparing the two sets of papers. So I think it's time to bring up maybe some newer research, even though it's really not that old. We're talking about 2013, 2014.
In literature years, that's ancient.
Especially for a condition like this. So let's talk about, this is a 2016 paper. It got accepted July 12, 2016. This is found under the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. And this is called Estimating the Risk of Radiocontrast-Associated Nephropathy. And this is by Emily Wilhelm Lean et al. This is actually, as the paper mentions, it's all about estimating the actual risk. This paper has some really interesting conclusions. Do you want to talk about that?
Absolutely. Their primary conclusion is that the risks of radiocontrast-associated nephropathy may be overstated in the literature and overestimated by clinicians. More accurate AKI risk estimates may improve clinical decision-making when attempting to balance the potential benefits of radiocontrast-enhanced imaging and the risks of AKI. They found, so it was a pretty big study. They used a nationwide inpatient sample data set for 2009, which consisted of over 7 million hospitalizations. They ran it through their inclusion and exclusion criteria and matched to try to see people that had a CT versus did not have a CT. What was their relative risk of an acute kidney injury? And what they found is those who had received a contrast had a rate of AKI at 5.5 versus those who did not receive the contrast had a AKI rate of 5.6. I think that those are not stating that contrast is protective, that just may be a little bit of just kind of the way the data fell out, but that they're really in this very, very large patient sample set, there was not a significant increase, and the two were pretty much equal.
Now, I know there are going to be people out there who are going to be jumping up and down, bouncing, shouting that the sicker patients, they're going to be in the non-contrast group as far as kidney function goes, because a lot of us are still using those creatinine cutoffs or EGFR in some place cutoffs. And so that, well, they were already in the cutoff, so they were already being used. So you're saying that the people who even got IV contrast who aren't as sick with kidney function are actually being put into the non-contrast group to start with. So maybe this actually isn't really as obvious as one may state.
Yeah. As you look through the paper, though, when you go to their figure two, it talks about the relationship of contrast administration. And, you know, they're kind of going through a lot of risks of, you know, COPD, peripheral vascular disease, complicated diabetes, malignancy, liver disease. I think that they did a fairly good job at trying to make sure that their population was matched with the contrast and no contrast. And if you go to the table two, no contrast group, you know, had more or very similar amounts of CHF, ACS, sepsis, pneumonia, UTI. So I really think that the two contrast groups, the contrast and no contrast group, really looked very similar as far as disease prevalence.
And they were using this based on ICD-9 codes, which they admit that by recognizing ICD codes, they may not have always been put in there, and so that there could have been a risk of missing some there. But I would feel like in the patients that are going to be sicker, you're going to make sure to mention all these points too. So that may not be a fair measure. Another point that they point, as they discuss, is actually when you go through and you analyze this, they point out that patients receiving radio contrast are generally sicker than those who do not receive radio contrast, just to grab a little quote off of that. So, I mean, they're pointing out that actually, maybe contrary to popular belief, these patients are actually probably sicker that are getting the IV contrast, and they're still doing okay.
And I think that this is, you know, a very large amount of patients and a very well-done review. I think this adds a little bit more to your armamentarium that, you know, maybe contrast is not as bad as it sounds.
They also like to mention that given that this result may run counter to longstanding physician beliefs about the risk of radio contrast and practices related to those beliefs, it is important to confirm a potentially controversial and practice-changing result in multiple studies and settings. And the reason why I bring that up is because up until this point, we only really had this study along with some of the McDonald Davenport, but they're saying, hey, we may need some more research, which comes up with our newest paper that was actually published just a couple of days ago in the Annals of Emergency Medicine called Risk of Acute Kidney Injury After Intravenous Contrast Media Administration. This is a paper by Hinson et al. So why don't we talk about this one for a minute? What do you think of it?
Oh, this was actually pretty exciting. I was, you know, on Twitter, and all of a sudden I started seeing this pop up, and it was very fortuitous that this was coming out right before we were about to do this. So I'm glad we didn't record this last week. I really liked this paper. It was a single center retrospective cohort analysis that was performed in a large academic emergency department and fairly busy, about 62,000 visits a year. This was a very interesting study design, as they chose not to have only one, but two control groups. Their investigation group was those receiving a contrasted CT in the emergency department. Their first control group was those receiving uncontrasted CTs in the emergency group. And their second control group was just patients admitted to the hospital that weren't having any CTs at all. So I thought this was really nice because it actually allowed you to take a look at the patients that were getting CT'd versus those that weren't. What was the incidence of acute kidney injury in that hospitalization in that study? So the primary outcome was the incidence of acute kidney injury. And it's important to also take a step back because they defined acute kidney injury in two ways. The first is the more traditional and the common way that they looked at a increase in serum creatinine above 0.5 or a 25% increase over the baseline at 48 to 72 hours. This is the common way that this is actually presented in the literature, and most of us are accustomed to looking at. They also use the Acute Kidney Injury Network Kidney Disease Scoring Guidelines, which is basically a three-stage system that has increase in serum creatinine from 0.3 to a 1.5 to 1.9 fold increase. Stage 2 is a 2.0 to 2.9 fold increase. And stage 3 was an increase over 4, which would mean that you're, or initiation of dialysis. The only thing I would have liked to see is if they also included the EGFR, as that is appearing to see as possibly a better screening tool. So their results were that contrast administration was not associated with an increased incidence of acute kidney injury, and it had an odds ratio of 0.96 with a 95% confidence interval. And they also looked at their definitions with both variables, with the traditional creatinine and then also acute kidney injury network scoring system, and they really found no difference. And this was true in all subgroup analysis. So this was really kind of an exciting paper.
I really think it was the next logical step for them to have actually gone ahead and said, okay, let's have a group where there's no CT at all. And I was waiting to see if someone would actually do that. And I was really impressed that this paper did, because I was waiting for someone just to make the smart comment of, well, it must be the radiation that's causing the AKI. Well, it's not even the radiation that's causing the AKI, guys. It's looks like it's okay there. Now, a couple of things to note when I was reading this paper. If at any point you had a CT with contrast, you're automatically put in the CT contrast category. So say you were someone who, for whatever reason, you had a non-contrast CT and a contrast CT, you fell into the contrast CT group. So they did pay attention to those types of numbers. They had a very, very large database that they were basing it off of, even though it was a single center retrospective, which I know if someone was just listening, they said, well, you just complained about Davenport doing that. Yes, but they did a pretty good job here on this too, factoring things in and out. They had a lot of exclusion criteria, and we'll list those kind of separately. But the main thing is that they made sure that there wasn't a recent CT scan at another visit, basically within the last 6 months, because this was some of the stuff they were following out for 6 months for. They were all checking like creatinine function and those types of things down the line. They were also looking at creatinine over the next 48 to 72 hours. So they had to make sure that they had follow-up serial creatinines done and they had an initial serum creatinine, because as we just talked about, there were two papers that seemed to have an elevated risk of AKI, but if you didn't have a baseline creatinine and follow-up creatinine to check that out with, how can you really actually know if that's going on? So I think they did a really good job on picking the right patients for this type of study, and which makes it all the more kind of evidence. And really the numbers that they took out were pretty equivocal as best as I can see as far as ratios and stuff like that. So I feel like this was a good paper.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like that they tried to follow patients out to 6 months of the index ED visit to try to see if these people developed acute kidney injuries, needed dialysis, and that was included in their secondary analysis, which I really think was nice to look at not only the short term, but also the long term risk of dialysis, renal transplant, 6 months. And the fact that some of those are more patient centered outcomes than just measured numbers. I mean, initiation of dialysis or renal transplant within 6 months, those are some pretty good patient centered outcomes. You'd like to make sure you avoid having to get a new kidney because of your CT scan in the emergency department. And they really found that there wasn't an increase risk in the 6 months of developing chronic kidney disease, which I think is also more ammunition to this this notion that maybe it's not as bad as we thought.
That's a very good point. They actually do list a couple different things. Using the Acute Kidney Injury Network Kidney Disease Improving Global Outcomes criteria, the probability of developing acute kidney injury was 6.8% for the contrast-enhanced CT group, 8.9% in the unenhanced CT group, and then 8.1% in the non-CT groups respectively. So as we follow that out, we notice that, okay, actually the lowest group was the contrast-enhanced CT. Let's move this to another part. Doing the traditional definition of contrast-induced nephropathy, the probability of developing acute kidney injury was 10.6% in the contrast-enhanced CT group, 10.2% in the unenhanced CT group, and then 10.9%, the highest, in the non-CT group. And to add even more to this, the probability of developing CKD, chronic kidney disease, within 6 months of the index ED visit was 2% in the contrast enhanced, 4.6% in the unenhanced, and then 3.5% in the non-CT group, again, the lowest being the contrast enhanced CT. Furthermore, the respective probabilities for initiation of dialysis was 0.4%, 0.9% and 0.61% respectively, and then the chance of renal transplantation, 0%, and then 0.1% and 0.1% respectively. So all that adds up. Every single case, those who got CT with contrast was in the lowest percentage risk group. So I guess next time I just need to get a CT with IV contrast. Is that what it's telling me here?
Probably not. But one of the things to also look at is that when you look at the patient's characteristics of the contrast enhanced CT and the unenhanced CT, the baseline characteristics are very similar as far as acute illness severity, medications, and comorbidities. So I think this was a very equal patient population between the two arms. Actually, the three arms.
I agree. And again, I was just joking about it. I guess maybe I need a CT with contrast next time. But it does seem to point out that maybe this actually is a little safer than we thought it was. Which leads to the next question. What's next to prove to people if they won't take it at this point? Because maybe there are limitations that this is retrospective. So do we need a nice big prospective study? One thing that they mentioned on there is that they need a... They admit that this is the largest controlled study of acute kidney injury after contrast medium administration in the ED that they've had. But they suggest that they had a randomized control trial as the next step. And I have certain issues with that. I don't know if maybe you have some issues with a randomized control trial.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little high or a little hard to have a patient come into the emergency department, rule out aortic dissection, and half of them get CT'd with contrast and half without, just because the diagnostic accuracy is decreased in some conditions to the point where you're risking the patient's life. I would be interesting to see if somebody could come up with a way to do that, possibly in less severe conditions, maybe belly pain, but I think you may be increasing the risk of missing diseases that way. I think what would be nice is a large multi-center prospective cohort where they are doing kind of a validation. Yes, it's not a randomized control trial, but a prospective multi-center so that we really can look to see what is the external validity of these numbers.
You mentioned the aortic dissection. I think the mesenteric ischemia is another example. I mean, those are types of patients that you have to get the contrast with, and you really need to look at that, or at least the contrast is going to give you a lot more detail. I think, like you said, it's going to be one of those, maybe a well-randomized prospective study of some kind, like you said, with the cohort. But at this time, I have to also wonder, like, when's enough is enough? When do we just say that we've done enough research on this topic? Yes, we could always do more research down the line, but when can we start saying that we need to start changing practice to maybe switch over to the EGFR instead of the serum creatinine levels? And when do we need to say that, yes, if a patient really does need and they meet the right guidelines, to go ahead and start doing CT with IV contrast? When is that going to be enough?
Well, I think that, you know, with these large papers and even the ACR's criteria of if their GFR is above 30, you're pretty much safe. I think that that's ready for prime time now. I think, though, there's still some question about those with worse renal functions below 30 on the estimated GFR, where you may still be running a risk. However, every medication that we do has a risk, and that's something that you have to weigh before the administration of everything. So I think for me, I'm going to be less concerned when my patient's GFR is above 30, and I may pause a little more when it's less than 30, but if it's a matter of life and death, I'm still going to get the CT and we'll deal with the kidneys after.
Yep. Screw the kidneys.
Screw the kidneys.
So with all that being said, I think this is a really great paper. I think all these have been great papers. And the main thing is, I think, to keep in mind, we're probably getting to that peak of what type of studies we can find out there. And then maybe until we get a prospective study, this is the best we're going to get. And that we shouldn't, like you said, delay this for prime time just for that reason, especially if we can get other people on board at our hospital and especially the radiologists. I think the radiologists may sometimes be the trickier people. But if you're listening out there and you're someone who's practicing emergency medicine, critical care, whatever, and if you can point out that even their own ACR manual points out that there's safety with this, I think that's something else to keep in mind.
And that always seems to be a very good tactic in emergency medicine, is you beat the consultants with their own literature that they haven't read. Because a lot of times in the emergency room, we've actually read it more than they have.
Oh, now I can already start seeing the pitchforks outside my window again. But there is truth to that. There is truth to that. It's, I'm about to say the forbidden words of TPA and stroke.
Oh, God. Yeah. We may have just gotten the iTunes, warning for explicit language on that one.
But I think it's worth mentioning that because, again, sometimes you look at other groups' research and you'll kind of notice this. And this is almost exclusively, if you noticed when we're talking here, radiology papers. We're taking it from the radiologists and using it to say, hey, other than the Annals of Emergency Medicine paper, everything else was from a different specialty. We're talking about nephrology, radiology. So maybe we aren't so off. Maybe this actually is a safe drug after all. Maybe using these contrast CTs of low or isosmolar levels is actually pretty safe to do. And so I'd encourage everyone out there, because again, we talked about these papers very briefly, to actually go through and read them all yourselves and see what else you can find out there. You may be surprised what else you find. Maybe you find the papers that we haven't even talked about. So with that said, any other final thoughts that you have?
No, just that I really thank you for letting me come on and talk about these today. It was absolutely wonderful, and I hope to do it again sometime soon.
Yeah, hopefully. It sounds like maybe next on pediatric emergency medicine pain control.
Yeah, I think we're putting something together.
All right, perfect. Well, why don't you give us the closing tagline here for us?
Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.